I'm Stargate Pioneer.
I'm Haley.
And I'm Lauren from Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D.
A podcast member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the one you're listening to now.
The opinions expressed are those of each individual. Check out all the other podcasts
at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
You are listening to the Starling Tribune, a podcast dedicated to the Arrow TV show.
This guy gets more airtime than the Kardashians, right?
This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, situations, and stories are the properties of Time Warner. I am the Oracle, and this is your Tribune.
Welcome back to the Starling Tribune. You might have noticed I am not, in fact, SP or Stargate Pioneer, whatever you want to call him. If you're his friend, you can call him SP. Otherwise, feel free to call him Stargate Pioneer. But you can call me Chris. Your reporters for this week, for this summer special edition of the Starling Tribune, looking back at season 5 from episode 1 of Legends of Tomorrow, are Neil.
At least in America, you get a last meal. Communism really sucks.
Michelle.
More drinking, less feeling.
And I am Chris. This isn't my first prison break. This podcast is recorded live on Thursday, June 30th, 2016, over on Geeks.live. I don't have that nice singing voice that SP has when he's like, Geeks.live, with some real good reverb and stuff. I can't do it. I really can't. We are just a few Gunna Geekers. We normally discuss the CW TV show Arrow, but this week we're talking Legends of Tomorrow for part of our summer break. Now, I love myself some comic books, but I don't know everything about comics as much as I hate to say it, so I have to defer to Neil a lot.
I am all over Rebirth. DC, you done it right, buddy.
And of course, I also have to defer to another one of our resident experts, that being Michelle.
I am going to take this 3-day weekend to get caught up. That is like the top of my to-do list.
Is this the right way to do it?
Rebirth. Rebirth.
We need to make ringtones.
Like Rebirth, totally.
Totes my goats, man.
Totes adorbs. I think Neil's going to explode. Did I break Neil?
Toot, toot.
So just a friendly reminder, we normally cover the CW TV show Arrow, but during this off-season podcast, we'll be talking about what happened on the 5th episode of the CW television show, Legends of Tomorrow, as well as news, articles, and announcements that have dropped during the off-season that will impact future episodes of Arrow when it returns for season 5. Probably just future episodes if everything in the Berlantiverse is the best way to put it at this point in time. This show will contain spoilers for the current episode of Legends Tomorrow, but if you're not caught up from something there in February, that's on you. So consider yourself fully warned if you've been trying to avoid spoilers for a show that's been out for a few months already. We're going to go deep into the spoilers. But before we start talking the guts of this story, Neil, why don't you go ahead and break down this current episode for us?
Thanks, Chris. So tonight we're going to be talking season 1, episode 5, and I'm pretty sure it's not season 5, episode 1, like Chris may have mentioned in the intro.
I'm a little dyslexic, okay, guys?
Anyways, the episode was titled Failsafe. The air date was Thursday, February 18th, 2016. The director was Dermot Downes. He's got 20 titles with lots of CW and genre TV to his credit, including 3 episodes of Legends of Tomorrow, 2 episodes of Arrow, 2 of the originals, 4 of Flash, 3 of Supergirl, 1 of Blindspot, 1 of CSI Cyber, 1 of iZombie, 1 of Gotham, 4 episodes of Tomorrow People, and the list goes on. This episode was written by a couple of familiar names, Beth Schwartz. She is executive story editor on Arrow, 23 episodes, if that name is familiar. And on Arrow, she was the writer of 17 episodes, the story editor of 2, and 23 episodes where she acted as co-producer. She's also written 2 episodes of Legends of Tomorrow and 1 of Heart of Dixie. I'm not
one
sure
of these
how that
things is not like the other.
You know what, but though, Heart of Dixie comes up all over the place. It's like these people have lives or something. The co-writer on this episode, because remember, we usually get 2, was Grain Godfrey. Now, he's really known for Flash episodes. He did 23 episodes of Flash as executive story editor, 5 of writer, 8 as executive story editor, and 1 where he actually wrote the story. He's co-written 3 episodes of Legends of Tomorrow. He did 1 teleplay for Arrow, and he also wrote 4 episodes of The Tomorrow People.
He's been involved in just a little bit of everything. And we started doing something a little different with our episodes of Legends of Tomorrow. We started talking about the ratings and how they compare to their shows. So, Michelle, what can you tell us about the ratings for this episode?
Well, this episode had a 2.25, which was a drop from the prior week of 2.39. That same week, Arrow had Code of Silence, which was season 4, episode 14, directed by one of our favorites, James Banford. That brought in a 2.44, which was the same as the week before. The Flash episode was Escape from Earth 2. That's season 2, episode 14. That brought in a 3.90, which was down 0.06 from the prior week, so not much of a drop. And Supergirl, Truth, Justice, and the American Way, season 1, episode 14, got a 7.25. That's because it benefits from being on CBS. It's down from 7.96 from the prior week. That prior week was for The Girl Who Has Everything, which was an adaptation of a classic Superman storyline, so that might explain the bump and then, you know, the decline. But that's how it all lines up.
It's crazy to look at the numbers that just being on network TV gives you when you compare all these things. We always talk about how awesome The Flash is doing, but a 7.25, that's insane.
Yeah, I mean, that's the benefit when your channel is everywhere and readily accessible.
And also the number one network, just like overall. It's a shame CBS actually thought it was a bubble show, but it's going to be on CW next year. So
yeah, at least they did the right thing in not canceling it and just moving it over to the CW for its upcoming season. That was probably the best way to do things. Best we could have hoped for, at least, because it wasn't looking good a little bit at the end, just based off of CBS's lack of comment on Supergirl. I was nervous. But I guess it's that time we need to start deep diving in on this episode like we promised we'd do. One last warning, there are spoilers, so if you have not watched this episode that has been out for 4 months or so, please pause the podcast, walk up to your internet consuming television program device or whatever you want to call it, push play on episode 5. Watch the episode, then come down and unpause this on your computer, your cell phone, whatever it is, and listen to us ramble about the episode.
No, not ramble. Provide meaningful and insightful commentary.
Let me rephrase. Listen to Michelle and Neil provide meaningful and insightful commentary while I ramble, because I'm not used to sitting in the, let's stay on the path of how the show is supposed to be executed chair. This is tough for me, guys. It's form and structure. How does this work? How does it work? Oh, wait.
SP's going to listen to this afterwards and just shake his head.
I know. I'm going to be so fired next week. But before I get fired, we should probably talk about what the overall theme is for this episode. How does it link back to the episode name, which we know is Failsafe? Well, I think there's one way we can say that Sarah's the Failsafe.
Exactly.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, she's the contingency. She is, you know, they always say she's the assassin on her team or on the team. You know, she was in the League of Assassins. So, hey, do what you're good at, Sarah. Act as the contingency, act as the failsafe, and just take Stein out. But for an assassin, she seems to have a lot of problems with that.
She hasn't quite had to be much of an assassin for, what, about 2 years-ish, year and a half? She's been a vigilante and then slightly insane because of a Lazarus pit where she killed a bunch of people, but she's not in the right mind, so that doesn't count. That's what I'm going with, at least.
Yeah, and she has been with a team, not only from before with Arrow, but now she's a part of a team again. And so, you know, Snart was kind of right there. You know, he's our criminal with a code. And, you know, he's one of our own. He's a team member. Maybe you shouldn't be doing that.
Who would think that a seasoned criminal such as Leonard Snart would be the voice of reason?
They have set him up so well as the moral anti-hero, though. As you said, the criminal with a code. It's going to be really natural when we get Flashpoint. So again, spoiler alert for the next season of Flash. But when he, if they follow the comics at least, he's Citizen Snart or Citizen Cold.
Correct.
And the hero of Star City. It's going to be easy to see him in that role. You know he's almost there.
Well, and do remember that Wentworth Miller was the first person out of all of these cast members to sign a deal that is exclusive to the Berlanti-verse. Not just one show. He's signed to be on all of them potentially. Which makes you think they have plans for him aside from him going back to do Prison Break.
Agreed.
Still love that show.
Now, as far as themes go, I was trying to find some way to work the name into the fact that, you know, this is the CW and the male actors always seem to be in pretty good shape. I think fair comment, Michelle, fair comment, Chris?
Very fair comment.
Yeah. And we didn't get one, we didn't get two, but we got three of the male leads on this ensemble cast this episode having shirtless scenes. So I'm like, is there some way that we fail safe?
This is the fail safe for anyone, any ladies that were going to rage quit. No, no, we're not going to do it now. We just got to see those three guys. We're used to seeing just maybe like Oliver Queen or Barry. No, no, you got three different pieces of eye candy this episode.
Very, very nice pieces of eye candy. I mean, I don't approve of torture, but if you're going to show torture on television, thank you for making the men hot and shirtless. Dear CW, that's one of the reasons why I love you.
Despite all the burn makeup Dominic Purcell was rolling with, it was still acceptable.
Yeah. This is one of the reasons why I love the CW. I mean, there's eye candy for people who like female bodies everywhere. You go to the mall, there's Victoria's Secret. We don't have a lot. So that's one of the things, you know, Vampire Diaries, The Originals, Arrow, now Legends of Tomorrow. Get me some eye candy. Thank you very much.
And this is the reason why Michelle was not testifying at the Senate Subcommittee on Torture, because her committee panel comments would have been, you know, maybe it's okay if they're shirtless and you show it to us. Other than that, I'm totally against torture.
Guilty.
Literally. That's what the subcommittee said. No, guilty.
Oh, speaking of violence, how about the fight scenes, Michelle?
I think I have made it clear that Sarah is like my favorite. I don't know if I've actually confessed that Sarah makes me question my sexuality, but here it is. Again, you know, that they go into like the bathhouse and there she's punching six guys and it's a kick and she's taking them down like they're paper, you know, just throwing up against the walls. Here, let me wrap my legs around you and just toss you and all this type of stuff. And I just love, she goes in there and to rip and snart. It's like, I just took down six guys and you can't handle one. Like, what gives?
That's because she's like the epitome of a badass, though. I mean, when it comes to hand-to-hand combat, she is going to be the best person on the Wave Rider to go and get into a brawl.
She steals her scenes. I think that that's a fair comment. That, you know, the physicality and there's, you know, jumping ahead in the show notes. She has been practicing martial arts for quite a while. And as a dancer, she's got that grace to her. The fight scenes, she steals and she's great at them.
That's fair.
And again, we had Sarah in the gulag as well, you know, throwing the ninja stars and being a badass in the hallways. And then, you know, this, what sticks with me for this one, not necessarily a fight, but Sarah with the sniper rifle, and she's not just a deadly hand-to-hand combatant. She was with the League of Assassins. So she's, I don't want to call her the triple threat, but she's an all-round threat.
Right, and don't forget, she also used the handgun after she threw the ninja stars to take out a bunch of Savage's minions. So she was using all sorts of weaponry this round, which makes sense. If you're an assassin, you're going to know how to use all sorts of different weapons in addition to these. And for audio listeners, I just held up my fist. Sometimes I forget that this is a video podcast too.
Oh, and then of course, yeah, we had the big team fight in the prison yard at the end with the evil Firestorm and then good Firestorm and the rest of the team all kicking butt. It wouldn't be a CW show if there wasn't a great ensemble fight scene.
I think we need a better name than just evil Firestorm. I'm just not sure what it would be. See, that's the problem. I thought about it too. And I was like, something dark side. I don't.
Well, she's just temporary Firestorm. It's like,
there you go. She's a scab Firestorm.
Commie Storm?
Commie Storm, yes!
Hashtag Commie Storm.
That was awesome.
There you go.
Sometimes we have good ideas when we're talking about 1986 USSR.
Well, you're allowed to. You're only allowed to talk about it in the... I love time travel. We can go back to when it was very easy to pick out the bad guys. The 80s, always Cold War dramas, always the bad Russians.
Da, comrade.
Oh, now I'm thinking, what was the Arnold Schwarzenegger one when he played the Russian cop with James Belushi? No, no one.
I should know.
I'm getting blank stares from my co-hosts.
There is a thing called the Googles, but I'm afraid that if I start We're Googling, podcasting. I'll go down a rabbit hole and not come back.
Let's not go there.
Okay, so listener, tweet at us, remind us what that Cold War Arnold Schwarzenegger movie was. I mean, he was a big cop. He had a big gun. He was with James Belushi. And yeah. But speaking of time travel, yeah, surprisingly, a show about time travel gave us more time travel.
Who'd have thunk it?
And so not only hanging out in the 80s, but did anyone think that we were getting a flashback scene at the beginning? Did that scene back with Sisko draw anybody else in, or just me for that half second before I went, wait a second?
As soon as I saw his hair and the fact he was wearing a jacket, I was like, oh, that isn't Sisko. This is a trickery. And then the bow tie on Stein, too, kind of made me go, oh, this can't be right. What's the trick?
Yeah, it was the hair for me, too. It's like, Sisko doesn't wear his hair that way. And then his posture was too good. This is fishy.
It's bizarro, Sisko.
And you know why? We picked that out because of the Starling Tribune hair report.
Hair report. I'm going to have to go off camera for that. I'm not allowed to talk about hair. It's in my contract.
We got the flashback, which wasn't a flashback. Of course, we were all hanging out in the 80s. I liked how they played, and I think that the show continually does this. It plays with probabilities of the future with Gideon in just about every episode, trying to figure out how have they impacted the timeline, what have they impacted, playing with the probabilities of things happen, events moving up or down in the timeline. And this episode was no exception.
Well, they kind of have to do that because they keep screwing up the timeline. I mean, we're only five episodes in, and they commented at the end, woohoo, we didn't screw up the timeline too bad at the end. I mean,
I know, because in every episode, Gideon's like, oh, look, this is the horrible future you guys have created. Look, there's all these atoms around, and we're all going to die. Oh, look, there's all these firestorms, and we're all going to die. Gideon's just like, y'all, look at what you've done. You keep breaking everything. Stop breaking everything.
You done beeped up, all right?
So I think we can all agree they're horrible time travelers.
You would have thought that that Rip would have learned something from Doctor Who.
Crossing the streams.
It was on purpose.
I know.
Of course. Yeah.
Not really. I don't understand Doctor Who.
Sarah did use her knowledge of the timeline because that's how she figured out that they needed to hang out with Yuri the Bear and go see the Broadfire. And she wouldn't have known that if not for hanging out with Ollie. And realizing that the Bratva is the way to
and
go.
Don't forget, we'll be seeing the Bratva this season on Arrow because they've hinted at the fact Oliver's going to Russia. He basically says it at the very end. We know he'll have to become a Bratva member now.
And I like the reference to the tattoos. Like for those of us, it's like an extra layer. Like he actually says you don't have any tattoos. Like if you don't have tattoos, you don't have a life story and you shouldn't be trusted. So it's kind of a nice little like, maybe like a little thing for those of us who watch Arrow and who know that the tattoos are important.
Especially that magic one from Constantine.
Exactly.
And you know what? He was away for 5 years. We're in year five. I think it's the one piece of the Oliver Queen puzzle that we haven't gotten through flashbacks yet.
And don't forget, we got to go back to the hair report. He's got to grow a giant, huge beard in a year now. Rogaine, man. Rogaine.
Vodka.
Magic herbs.
He got some magic herbs and combined them with stuff from Lian Yu with Russian vodka. And then what? Next day, he's like, what happened to my beard?
Oh, that's awesome. And that's how he gets his fortune back. He monetizes that, you know, in season five in Star City.
It's the hair club for men. I'm a member.
Oh, that means the wig department's going to get more work again. Oh, heaven help us.
Way to bring us down.
Oh, hey, let's talk about Rip Hunter. Captaining skills, scale of 1 to 10. Michelle?
5.
Chris?
I was going to say 4.
I was going to give him a 2 this episode.
I'm going to go with, at least in the end, he listened to everybody. Like, he acted too cautiously in the beginning. You know, he's being that type of captain, and then he finally came around to listening to everybody. That's why it's a 5.
He's overcompensating for the fact he lost Carter. That's part of the problem there, is he lost someone. He wasn't expecting to lose anyone that soon. I imagine he anticipated he'd lose someone at some point. But to lose someone right off the bat, now he's like, I can't let anyone get hurt. But he still has his obsession with Vandal Savage, so he's balancing on a fine edge.
Yeah, and part of that is Kendra and Jackson convincing him to join the fight. And I think there was a quote in this episode, you're not playing chess with all your pieces. And yeah, he hobbles himself, and he assembled a team for a reason. He probably thought it through. He figured out who would compliment who. And then he's like, I'm not going to use him. Just a couple.
Yeah, he gave that whole like, oh, we can't give Vandal Savage the two most valuable things ever. You know, like the other half of Firestorm and Kendra. But it's like, you're creating a mess by doing that.
But the Kendra thing is really not that big a deal. Because if she dies, you just travel in time and get another heir as Kendra. I mean, I'm not trying to be callous, but that's what they could have done with both the Hawks. Oh, Carter's dead. Let's travel back 60 years in the past and go and get that Carter and bring him here.
Yeah, and realistically, they know they only need one. They only need Kendra with the dagger in the drawing room. Clue reference? Yeah.
I see what you did there. Are we going to play Clue after this?
Good one.
Star City Clue?
Nice. It would be Legends of Tomorrow Clue.
It was Deathstroke the Terminator with a samurai sword getting Moira Queen on the side of the road.
Oh, I was going to say Felicity with the scepter in, what is it, Palmer Tech.
Ooh.
Damien Dark with the arrow at Iron Heights.
Too soon.
Too soon? Oh, come on.
Hashtag no Laurel, no arrow.
That's our soundbite.
Let's go on to some characters I actually do like. Let's talk about Ray Palmer.
Oh, Mr. Boy Scout.
Mr. Boy Scout. It gets referenced multiple times, and then he gets the crap kicked out of him.
And then he makes a mom joke. He should be on the Gonna Geek podcast. Oh, Steven, that one was for you, buddy. I think they listened to the Gonna Geek podcast, and they put one in just for Steven.
I stopped making Steven's mom jokes a year ago. It's been very difficult not to, because I get set up.
It's low-hanging fruit. It's almost too easy.
So did anyone expect him to take the beating for Mick after Mick had pretty much betrayed him in his eyes earlier? Did we expect, yeah, he's a good guy. He's going to do what he can.
Yes, because not only is he a Boy Scout, but he is continually principled. He is, I'm going to make a D&D reference here. He is the lawful good character on this team, and he will always be lawful good. Nobody else is that alignment. And if you took that away from him, it calls into question his character, it calls into question what they have set up over the last 2 to 3 seasons. You could argue that it would be an evolution of the character, but I think it would be going off script. So yeah, I saw that coming.
I like your description of that character. I think it makes a lot of sense. The lawful good, yeah.
Yeah, just it put in a lot of things together. Because, yeah, first you think it might be him being the whole hero trip, but when you do look at it deeper, when he says afterwards that, you know, we're a team and this is what we're supposed to do for each other, then and it makes sense.
He's channeling his inner Superman from a movie 10 years old at this point in time, which really made me feel old when I saw looking back on Superman Returns 10 years earlier on Facebook the other day. I was like, really? 10 years? And it has been.
We've talked a lot about Sarah Lance in the lead up to this part, but I think it's just worth repeating. She doesn't take the shot. So was that just to demonstrate her humanity, or do you think there was more to it than that? That it was just for the sake of plot?
I think both. I think it's in part that she doesn't feel that she needs to be just that assassin anymore. I mean, Snart's the one expressing confidence. Her, you don't have to do this. You're not a killer. Things like that. And if you think about it, Snart has a code of honor. He robs. He steals. Doesn't really kill that much.
Yeah. And one of the things about this episode, I really liked this episode. Because it really was about, I mean, it was the simple plot. Rescue Stein, Ray, and Mick. But then you had a lot of team dynamics. What does it mean to be a good team player? What does it mean to, like, how much of yourself is appropriate? Like, Sarah is like, you know, I'm an assassin. And like, she's been told that. But now she's sort of realizing it, that maybe she is more, and trying to accept that I am more than that. So, you know, this episode really sort of dealt with a lot of dynamics. I mean, look at Jackson at the end and everything. This was, you know, kind of really emotional. And yeah, so I think it wasn't just plot. It was her really trying to struggle and evolve as a person.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. And not only did it focus on her development as a character and, you know, moving Sarah's story forward, but I think in many ways it moved Leonard's, like Captain Cold, Leonard Snart's story forward in his giving us more color to who he is and what he does. But really, it moved Heatwave, Mick Rory's story forward. And it gave him, I won't say a role model, because there's no way he's a role model, especially with the next episode. But it did advance elements that will come back later in the season to really flesh out Heatwave as we start entering the whole Kronos storyline.
And you see that he has a code of honor of his own. He stood up for me. He helped me. I have to help him then. I'm not going to leave him behind. It's a strange code of honor, but it's what works for him.
And again, jumping ahead, I'm glad we're doing this after the whole season. Because if you go forward to the scene in the forest that we know is coming, and everything that everybody has espoused on this one, Heatwave saying you don't leave him behind, Captain Cold saying you don't kill your team members, it kind of throws all of those principles, at least for these two characters, into question as we move forward, at least seemingly so, with a redemption arc, not really a redemption arc, but a different take on those same principles at the very end of the season.
I can see it. Mick's an awesome character.
Yeah, and it moved along the Firestorm story as well, this episode.
Yeah, you finally get some resolution between Jax and Professor Stein at this point. They're figuring out how to work together, after sort of being able to work together before joining the Legends.
Well, and we talked about in the last podcast, too, that in episode 4 of Legends of Tomorrow, it was mainly about the conflict between Stein and Jax. They were at each other the entire time. It's good to kind of get some resolution there, because the worst thing I think these writers could do is drag out these interpersonal conflicts and not quickly give us resolution and move to something new. We are a 21st century audience. You know, we have short attention spans.
What?
Especially for comic book drama. So I'm glad they resolved it.
As am I. We talked a lot about Mick already, but he does have another thing he says. He's willing to die for the perfect score. Going back to his sense of honor, you stand up for the guy that helps you out, and then you're willing to die for the perfect score. Because for him, it's all about the thrill of the hunt, both him and Snart, I think.
And again, you talked about how Snart isn't a killer, and I think him not being a killer, him just being a criminal, and a very good criminal, and as you said, the thrill of the hunt, is why he made the agreement with Flash that, yeah, I'll keep doing what I'm doing, I won't tell anybody who you are, but I won't kill. There we go. We got our deal.
Yep. And we talked a little bit about Martin Stein already. I did have to say I loved seeing Victor Garber get a chance to channel his inner Jack Bristow again from Alias in some scenes in here when he's getting interrogated. So what drug are you going to pump me with now? I was like, Jack's back. This is awesome. I had flashbacks to time when I was younger, and now I feel old because I'm remembering a show that's like 15 years old. Damn it.
Such a good show.
Until the end. It kind of fell apart at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. It went about a season too long, but that's neither here nor there.
And I really like how snarky he got when he realized it was the fake Sisko. He's like, nah, it's the hair. You know, again, nope. Don't know what you're doing.
Sir?
What was it, fake sarcasm or attempt at sarcasm?
Exactly.
It's close.
It's close, but not quite.
I started reading GQ.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's like, no.
Did GQ even, okay, this is the 80s we're in. Yeah, it would have existed back then. I had to stop and think for a second. I was like, wait, 80s? Because I was thinking we were in the 60s still. And I was like, but even then, it probably existed.
Yeah. Yeah, it's iconic.
See, I told you, I'm here to ramble.
And Jefferson Jackson, you know, Jax cutting himself to communicate with Stein. We've seen that a couple of times throughout. I think it came up in Arrow as well, with Kendra making the suggestion. I don't think Jackson really shined in this one, but the resolution, as we said, I think was really good and really necessary at this point.
I think so as well.
Is anyone going to miss Dr. Valentina Vostok, evil Russian doctor?
Not particularly.
No.
The only thing that made me sad, you know, going back and rewatching it, is she is a canon character from DC. We talked about this last week. She does, with part of the Doom Patrol storylines, become Negative Woman for a while, and then takes the position as the head of Checkmate as the White Queen. All of this happening after she defects from the Soviet Union. unless that pile of ash is defecting, probably not going to stick to canon.
But it is a show about time travel, so who knows? They could come and pluck her out of time minutes before she dies and bring her to the future and then take her back to die eventually. I don't know. It's very Star Trek-ish right there.
Very.
Very Star Trek-ish.
Wow. I'm going to call you Mr. Fantastic because you have an incredible ability to reach, sir.
I try to come up with loopholes and ways I can change the canon to be different just to screw with people.
And by people, you mean me, damn it.
Well, you are a person, yes. So, therefore, you would be people.
Peoples is peoples.
Peoples be
frogs
people.
Is peoples.
But I think we've kind of wrapped up our talk on the characters and what's happened with this episode. So, Neil, what can you tell us about what's going to happen in 2046 with some people that are people?
And they're green. It's not easy being green, apparently. Well, we saw it at the end of this episode. And speaking of time travel, we know that Kronos makes an appearance, knocks them out of the time stream, and they end up in Star City 2046. This was a fantastic episode. I cannot wait to talk about Star City of the Future next week, where you know we run into characters that are near and dear to this podcast's heart. The episode title, Star City 2046, Season 1, Episode 6 of Legends of Tomorrow. The air date was February 25th, 2016, and the summary was a malfunction sends the Wave Rider to 2046 Star City, where the team faces a future in which they failed to stop Savage and return home. And remember, this is where we get the goatee. Oh yeah. Director Steve Schill, writers, the big man himself, Mark Guggenheim, with co-writer Ray Unterschied. I probably butchered that.
Yeah, I couldn't say it after reading it. I could try and get the computer to pronounce it, but that would probably be even worse. Before we move on to the next piece, though, real quick, does anyone else think they need to make a Funko Pop of Old Man Ollie?
Yes.
From Star City of 2046.
Ooh, with a removable arm.
Yes, just like the Black Knight one has. How cool would that be?
That would be awesome.
So, Funko, if you're listening, we don't want any credit. Just send us all one, because we'll geek out over it and we'll promote it on the podcast.
I'll pay for that one, as long as it's not a stupid SDCC exclusive.
See, that's my concern, is it'd be a convention exclusive because it'd be so cool.
Those are awful.
Well, the thing is, you wait long enough, then you can go buy them at like FYE and stuff like that, I've realized, because I have some exclusive ones I've bought at the bookstore.
We'll talk later, guys.
Yeah, we'll have a chance to vent about Funkos and things like that. But before we do that, if you've been listening to the Starling Tribune for a while, you know we have a little checklist that right now is the DC Easter Egg and Pop Culture Checklist, which originally started as the Bat Checklist, because if you've watched the first two seasons of Arrow, there's a lot of inspiration taken from Christopher Nolan's Dark Knight movies, so there are a lot of Batman connections could be made. But as we've moved on and more shows been added to the Berlantiverse, it's become more of DC Easter Eggs and DC references that you see in some of the Berlanti shows. So we take a list from comicbook.com each week, and we try and run through those. And this week, I think we have 14 different little Easter eggs calling out to the DC universe at large and some pop culture references as well. So lots of stuff coming up for Failsafe. Michelle, why don't you take the first one?
Failsafe. It's a movie about a Cold War era conflict and a president of the United States trying to recall a bomber. I actually remember watching the 2000 telecast of this. It was actually broadcast live with George Clooney and some other people who are also awesome. And it's about how they try to stop this bomber from dropping nukes on Moscow and everything that they try to do to stop it from happening, but it doesn't. Sorry, spoilers.
Spoilers.
It's from something from 2000. I think I'm safe.
That's true.
And we gave a spoiler alert at the beginning, so we're okay.
We did, but we didn't include that movie in the spoiler alert. So if you have hate mail, send it to js@gunnageek.com because he gets all of our hate mail for us. He has requested it specifically. But Neil, what do we got next?
Well, the next was a bit of an Easter egg that we talked about in our general discussion. Is that we get a guest appearance by Cisco Ramon. Not the real Cisco Ramon, but probably the same actor. So good to see Cisco coming over from The Flash. And again, he's got a shared history with Kendra. So good to see him again in this episode.
We also get a reference to another movie from the early 2000s where Vandal Savage refers to Stein's beautiful mind, specifically about not wanting to hurt it. So if you're not familiar with that, it is a reference to a Russell Crowe movie from the early 2000s about the mathematician John Forbes Nash. Very good book and very good movie. It's well worth watching or reading if you have not. But what was our next reference, Michelle?
Got that from the beginning, Wentworth Miller. This isn't my first prison break. You know, a nice way to work in, you know, the show that made him famous and that he is doing the reboot of.
It's not actually a reboot. It's more of a continuation. I'm not sure how they're pulling it off.
Sorry, continuation. I'm getting all those terms mixed up.
It's the new trope now. If it was good in the 2000s, we're going to bring it back in the 2010s.
Versus a soft reboot, a hard reboot, a reimagining, a reimaging.
An Abrams effect, things like that.
Hey, the next Easter egg, and we talked about this already, is we get a call back to the Bratva and to Ollie's involvement with the Bratva. And again, we're going to see a lot more of them in season 5 of Arrow this year.
It's true. Next up, we've kind of got the classic trope of, if you go back in time, would you kill person X to save the future? You sort of get that here with Martin Stein of, we've got to kind of kill him to save the future. So it's kind of a loose connection, but it does fall in with one of those traditional time travel tropes. Like, would you go back in time and kill Hitler if you had the chance? That kind of thing.
True. Next, we have Yuri the Bear. Bratva agent isn't a DC character, but it is a children's character.
And we've talked about this one, shirtless hanging torture. This is a trope in the CW. And not only did we get the three characters in this episode, I'm not sure I can count the number of times that Ollie has been shirtless and tortured. I think it's in his contract now.
I'm sure there's a Tumblr that has GIFs of all of those instances. We could probably go and find. It's probably like shirtlessollie.tumblr.com, if I had to guess.
Probably.
We'll check that out later. I need some workout inspiration.
There you go. So next one we have is when Jax is running across the prison yard, dodging shots, dodging fire. When he gets to the other side to get to the circuit breaker, he drops the line of Barry Allen, who we all know that references the Scarlet Speedster himself. The fastest man alive, Barry Allen the Flash.
Vandal Savage vibes. His sensing of Hawk Girl looks like how Cisco vibes. So if you watch The Flash, how they, it's kind of like a quick images and they kind of like shake, shimmer in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's just, they have a CGI effects filter that they know how to use. Let's just use it.
Yeah, like on the Vampire Diaries, they have like this way to do magic and they do like this weird like brown sort of filter, shaky double image. And they've used that for 7 seasons.
Hey, if it works, it works. You don't break up what's working.
Don't mess with it. 7 seasons, you don't mess with that formula. It's like the people on Supernatural. 12 seasons, you don't screw with something that's working.
Exactly.
The next Easter egg was a bit of a callback that Stein is talking about Jax's drinking age. Now, we all remember that in the pilot, he actually spiked his drinks, didn't really care about him drinking in that one, wanted him to drink. So, interesting, a little callback that we have to the pilot with Stein and Jax's drinking age.
So, next up, we've got a call out to a lot of the alternate universe comics, the end of the world comics that DC does, because it generally ends up being that Star City's the seat of the resistance, which is what the computer models show here. If Vandal Savage had created his Soviet Firestorm project, you see that Star City is the last remnant of hope for mankind. And we've seen that before. If you've seen The Dark Knight Returns, the animated movie or the comic, Oliver Queen's kind of a rebel in that. Then we saw it in the Booster Gold Rip Hunter story in Booster Gold Blue and Gold.
And in fact, in Injustice, he is one of the leaders of the resistance as well.
I forgot about Injustice.
Yep. By the way, hashtag call me Storm.
Oh, next we have partners. Jackson Stein saying partners feels like Ollie and Barry. Nice parallel.
And it's nice how the writers can pull those back. And last but not least, we talked about how they got derailed and slammed into the wrong timeline at the end. And we're pretty sure that it gets confirmed in the next episode. We get Connor Hawk, which is Ollie's son with Shadow in the comic universe, at least in the pre-New 52. And that's awesome.
Yeah, I don't know if he exists in the post-52 or the Rebirth world. I'm so confused on what's in the continuity now.
Given that Shadow is his stepmom in the New 52, that would be tough.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's problematic. But that's kind of wrapped up the little Easter eggs and DC Universe at large references. We do actually have some Arrow news this week, and I'm going to hand off. Who wants to take the first story? I'll just open it up to democracy.
Okay, I'm going to jump in because it's such a cool story.
There you go. Take it.
All right. So the producers say that next year, actually, it was Stephen Amell, I think, that said a long absent character from season two is coming back this season.
Ooh.
And that this season will be effing mean. Now, this got a lot of people talking. Who from season two do you think is coming back?
Well, I wish it was Deathstroke, but we've seen on Twitter that Manu Bennett does not have the best relationship with the Arrow team anymore, so it's probably not him. The simplest thing to say is probably Anatoly, since we haven't seen him since season two, and he's presumably in Russia, where Oliver's going to.
I'm hoping for Huntress.
Ooh, that would also be good.
I think it would be great if she came back. We also haven't seen Sin, but was she in season three? I could have sworn she was in season three.
I don't remember. Maybe very early on, but she's got a show on MTV now, so she's on contract somewhere else. She's doing the live-action Scream series, I think.
I like the idea of China White coming back because, you know, we're going to need a villain or two for the next season.
Yeah.
True. We also haven't seen Solomon Grundy, Cyrus Gold, in this universe since season two, so that would be cool.
That would be pretty cool, too. Man, there's so many cool stuff. I don't know if Count Vertigo is one I really want to see back. The new Vertigo I don't like as much, but we haven't seen him since season three, I guess, the new Vertigo. So who knows? That's possible. Maybe.
I think you nailed it with Anatoly. That's
the low-hanging fruit. That's the one that makes the most sense for it to be, but that doesn't necessarily mean it'll be right because they like to screw with us.
Yeah.
I hope it's Huntress.
Yes. Yeah, so do I. That would be awesome. Hey, moving along in our news stories, and this one was all over the interwebs this week, is that Wendy Miracle came out and said, you know, and she gave some color onto Curtis Holt's character this year. And she said, essentially, if Felicity is the software person on the team, Curtis is going to be more of the hardware guy on the team. As he evolves towards becoming Mr. Terrific in season five, they really want to differentiate Felicity and Curtis. So they're going to make him more like Cisco, which is cool. You know, they can't always go to Central City for their gear.
Well, they can. It's just less than optimal. So next up, we've got the news that Tyler Ritter is joining the Star City Police Department for season five. If that name sounds familiar, that's because he's the son of the late John Ritter. He's also had guest roles on series such as Modern Family, Grey's Anatomy, and most recently Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and two episodes of an NCIS crossover. And he was also on The McCarthys on CBS, which I've never seen either. So I recognize like two of those shows he's been on that are ones I've watched.
And this makes sense. Well, we do need a name brand cop now that we don't have Captain Lance anymore. So he is probably our, you know, name brand SCPD officer for this season.
And next, Carly Pope from The Tomorrow People in Suits joins Arrow season five as Susan Williams. Williams is a journalist from Coast City. And in the comics is the wife of Jim Jordan, who is the younger brother of Hal Jordan, better known as Green Lantern. Pope will debut in episode 3, and let's hope she's with News 52.
Everyone's with News 52, I think.
Which is cool. Now, the question is, will they link it to the Jordan family? Are they backdooring getting us ready for Hal Jordan, or are they just teasing us? They need a reporter, and Lana Lang and Lois Lane are taken.
Oh, I really wish it was a tease for Green Lantern, but I'm pretty sure the DC mandate on high has said they're not allowed to touch that character.
Yeah, and I think it might, because if they introduce Lantern, that's such a big character, then it's going to hint for another show. And I think Stephen Amell is really tired of setting up spinoffs, because that's one of the things like I've noticed his post interviews for this, like post season four, he's just like, yeah, we don't need to do that this season. Yeah, we're going to have one crossover, but we don't need to set up anything else. Right, writers? Right?
Right, yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah.
So, well, I'm even going to skip ahead to one of our later news stories that in a recent Facebook Live chat, he was asked if he would like to bring Nightwing in. And he thought about it for a second. He's like, no, I think we should bring Roy back for another sidekick. And you get it, Michelle. I think you nailed it there. He doesn't want to set up these big DC characters. You know, the C-list, D-list, E-list that are cool, but not necessarily going to spin out and detract from what Arrow is.
That's true. He's been very active on Facebook Live lately, Stephen Amell, and he was asked about whether Kevin Smith might be coming to direct an episode of Arrow. He was asked about that possibility. He said, "I'd say they are good. He's not directing one this year unless things change, which they always can, and they already have. So please try to interpret that as best you can." So Kevin Smith might get to do an episode of Arrow after having gotten to do a pretty good episode of Flash.
And we've talked about how Kevin Smith is at least open to try to write some of the Arrow and bring in onomatopoeia. So that would be very cool.
I've shared my thoughts on that in the past. I will not do so this time.
Hey, we got an interview as well. Hey, Michelle, you mentioned that you're the Katie Lotz fan, the Sarah interview. Do you want to take this one?
Sure. Sarah might get a girlfriend in Legends of Tomorrow season 2. I think Sarah might get a new girlfriend, Katie Lotz teased. She also said she hopes that Katrina Law, who plays Nissa Al Ghul, can make a guest appearance despite her own new series. She worked it in her deal so that she could come and see us. So Sarah and Nissa, that would be great.
Look, I'll be honest. Anytime you get Nissa to show up on here, it's awesome because Katrina Law is awesome in the role of Nissa. She's very good.
Very good.
And that's probably what got her her own series. I think she's one of the stars on Training Day this year coming up. I'm not sure what network it's on, but I'm pretty sure somebody saw that and went, oh yeah, she's got mad skills.
That would not surprise me. So I'm a cartoon guy. I'll take this next one because I love me some cartoons. The new Justice League action cartoon has added Green Arrow on top of the trinity of Superman, Wonder Woman, and Batman. The new cartoon poster features Green Arrow, Plastic Man, Firestorm, and Space Cabby? What? I didn't even know that was a character.
What?
Literally, Space Cabby. I was reading it. I was just like, that's a thing?
Is that a person or a thing?
Yes.
I don't know.
It might be both or some combination.
So, wait. So, it's a character who can actually turn into his own Uber?
He's just an Uber.
He's
a self-driving Uber.
Come on, Batman, hop on the back.
Hey, I got free water.
So maybe in some slightly less ridiculous news that we'd make fun of, it was also announced late today that Tom Felton, who you might recognize from the Harry Potter movies as Draco Malfoy, has joined The Flash as a season regular. According to the article over at comicbookresources.com, The Flash just got a touch more magical. Harry Potter star Tom Felton has joined the hit CW show as a series regular character Julian Dorn, as a fellow CSI at the Central City Police Department who suspects there's more to Barry Allen than just his good reputation.
Well, it's good to see that there's somebody else working in the CSI department in that city, because it's like Barry was the only one, and also in not a very good lab. I mean, it's like a lab in the library or something, not really very sanitary and pristine.
With a skylight that opens with windows. If you have ever worked in a lab, that is not what you want to keep samples. And oh, there's spores and there's yeast and you've got cultures and it's just not good.
So you guys might be wondering why Chris did two back-to-back stories, because I realized the next thing, it's definitely got to be Neil's story. He's the resident toy aficionado of the Starling Tribune. So Neil, what do we have for some comic and toy news this week?
Well, last week you heard me kind of nerd rage about the San Diego Comic-Con exclusive from Pop Funko, the unmasked Malcolm Merlyn Pop Funko. And I mentioned how the day it was announced, they went up on eBay for $150. Well, the good news is that the day after, they started to come up around $30 on eBay. The bad news is, once they all got above $60 to $70, I stopped bidding on them. So, I am still going without a Pop Funko of unmasked Malcolm Merlyn.
Do you want an unmasked Oliver Queen?
Damn you, sir. Damn you. Funko also announced a giant 6-inch Gorilla Grodd exclusive. So if you're trying to collect all the CW-verse Pop Funkos, you've got two Comic-Con exclusives. And yeah, Grodd looks awesome. One other Arrow-related San Diego Comic-Con exclusive came out from Icon, which makes models and statues. And they are actually releasing a Series 2 or a Season 2 paperweight with Hood and hashtag bring back sleeves just for Chris. He stands approximately 8 inches tall, cast in high-quality resin, expertly painted with a paperweight base. So it looks cool, and we will put the link in the
show
notes.
That's only $50 if you can catch it there. That's not bad.
Yeah. Yeah. For most people that are trying to go paperless, it's not a huge thing unless you just want a very heavy statue.
It's just a statue. That's all it really is. They make flash ones they call paperweights that are just a statue with a heavy base, which means it won't fall over. That's your silver lining.
Very cool. That's it for toy news this week, folks.
Well, thank you for bringing that toy news to us. And thank you to everyone who has liked the Starling Tribune on Facebook. We've seen an uptick in Facebook likes. We really do appreciate that. I assume it's a combination of more regular posting and the weekly videos for the podcast being displayed on there. So thank you to everyone who has been sending some likes our way. We greatly appreciate it.
Now, I am going to take the next segment because if you've been listening to this podcast, our intro, and some of the discussions that we've had this week and other weeks, you'll know that we are part of a network, a podcast network called Gonna Geek. There are a ton of geeky podcasts from TV shows to tech to comics, you name it, we probably have a geeky podcast for you. And we always like to take the opportunity to tell you about another podcast on the network. This week, I am going to talk about one of my favorites, and I'm going to try to make our very own Chris Farrell blush. This week, we are talking about Chris's solo podcast called Nerd Alert News. And recently, he recorded episode number 42 titled Chris Loves Mass Effect, and Don't We All?
I really do. It's one of my favorite game series of all time.
So Chris tells us about Sony's plans to work with Marvel Studios in the future, but honestly, that's a minor story compared to some of the other news that he covers this week. He talks about James Earl Jones returning as the voice of Darth Vader in Star Wars Rogue One, Grant Gustin confirming that Flashpoint is coming to season 3 of The Flash, and we talk about Mass Effect. Chris gets to geek out over the fact there is a series of books coming out to fill the gaps between Mass Effect 3 and the upcoming Mass Effect Andromeda. So check it out. Nerd Alert News, episode number 42.
Don't screw it up, BioWare. Don't screw it up.
Oh, I know. They better not.
We still have a domain bot for a Mass Effect podcast for the network, so that might be something to explore again in the future as these books are coming out. But that's neither here nor there. We should probably start wrapping up the show. We're almost at an hour mark, and we want to have some time later for folks to join us. So thank you to everyone that did join us live on Geeks.live or over on the Facebook side of the house. Thank you to everyone who's downloaded the podcast or listened to our replays on YouTube or on Spreaker. It's great to have you guys listening to the show, and we love hearing about it.
And I just want to thank everybody that has joined us live this evening in our Blab chat. If you want to join the wackiness that is the Starling Tribune Live, you can join in live on Thursdays at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern on blab.im or geeks.live, and just search for Starling Tribune. And don't forget, after the show, we always open up the fourth seat on the Blab interface for our live listeners to hang out and share their thoughts. You can watch the next live show on the Gonna Geek Network over on geeks.live. The next live show on the network will be Better Podcasting, Friday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Check it out.
Don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes. While you're there, go ahead and rate and review us. 5 stars, please. Like us on Facebook and YouTube and badger us on Twitter. You can find all of our contact information on the Gonna Geek Network at GonnaGeekNetwork.com, where you can check out our forums and other shows.
And if you want to share your thoughts between live episodes, please head on over to our Facebook page, send in a tweet, or you can call us and leave a voicemail at 612-888-CAVE. That's 612-888-2283, and we'll be sure to play the voicemail on the podcast. Guys, totally fun hanging out and talking some Legends of Tomorrow with you. Michelle, thank you so much for joining us, stepping into SP's shoes. Tons of fun. That wraps it up for another week. Any last words before we sign off and open up the Blab interface to our live listeners? At Michelle Ealy.
Hashtag shirtless torture.
At Chris Farrell.
Hashtag no Funko for Neil.
And I am at Neil Isn't Witty, signing off with hashtag commie storm. Oracle, I think we're done here.
This was the Starling Tribune. You can leave us feedback at GunnaGeek.com or check out our archive at StarlingTribune.com. Visit GunnaGeek.com for more podcasts. Music by Kevin MacLeod can be found at incompetech.com. This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, stories, and situations are the property of Time Warner. No infringement is intended. We will see you for the next episode of CW's Arrow.